settings are today, kids.
All right, let's go see.
Tim is only in my right earphone, and he's very quiet.
Now I'm super loud.
Huh. Where am I? I'm, can anybody hear Tim Riley?
Can anybody hear me? No. And I'm only on one channel. Okay. There's something wrong with my mic.
Welcome to CBS Radio.
Now you've doubled the level that he was yesterday.
How about now?
All right.
Is that better?
Fine?
Yeah, considering he's twice as hot as
you're
us.
You're way too loud, though. You're
hello.
A little too loud.
You're way too loud.
And mouthy. Quit thinking for yourself. Give me a turkey pot pie. I just,
yeah.
Moments ago, I was just talking to Sean Couples in engineering, and I said, is the microphone situation fixed? And he said,
yeah,
sure. And then he sort of went back to typing.
Well, he's down there now, adjusting lights and
see,
dials.
See, now Tim is back to being all, like, way louder than the rest of us.
I don't mind that.
Sick. Let's just randomly twist dials and knobs and see what happens. Hi there, it's 1 minute and 13 seconds after the hour of 12.
I think everything is fine now.
The month of August, in the year of our Lord 2006. Let's go around the room and have a sound check, shall we, Sarah Dillon?
Hello. I sound okay.
Tim Riley?
The quick brown fox jumped over the crazy dog.
All right, Tim is still a little hot, but other than that, I think it's fine.
Too hot.
Yeah, Tim is hot.
He's on fire.
Okay, hey. Sending out a love note to Deborah. Or whatever the hell you're doing in that air check. What was it? What was that air check? Aren't you sending out a love note to a woman? Aren't you doing some dedication?
Oh, I might have been.
This one's going out to Candace. Have I done the plushly? Well, whatever. Here we are in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming along.
It's been established that we're here again.
If you'd like to be part of today's program, you can do it via the phones, which may or may not work. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like to engage with us electronically. It is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. It's all very exciting. Got about 12 seconds now without anything imploding. Let's plunge on ahead, shall we? A whole bunch of stuff to get through today, most of which we will tease here in just a moment with Mailman Chris. I would like to make this observation. We went the length and breadth and depth and girth of yesterday's program, and I would estimate, this is a rough account, that we made probably 150 jokes about the deaths of cats yesterday. And at no point did we get a single complaint. We got one. We got one complaint from a guy who self-identified as a person who owned 12 cats. At no point during yesterday's program did we receive any other, a single solitary lone complaint about our rather laissez-faire attitude towards the sort of the early demise of felines. So I will just let that evidence stand. That is a little prima facie evidence right there. So let that stand on its own. 503-733-2970. There was a great moment. I was at Fred Meyer last night with Laura. There was a great moment where you're walking through the, you know, whatever, the sporting good aisle or the camping aisle. And we saw one of those huge Coleman coolers. And it had, I swear to God, a little sticky thing on the front of it. You know, where it's got the spiky edges and it's like, now 20% more. And it said, now, new airtight lid. And without even thinking about it, it's just like, you know, you can fit a full-size cat in one of those things, no problem. And then we just sort of walked down the aisle. And you don't really realize that people are standing by you until you say something like that.
Killer coolers.
It's 503. Not just cat killers, cat preservers. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email us, Rick at RickEmerson.com. Phil wants to correct us on something now that we're a cozy 4 minutes into the program. Hello, Phil.
Quick brown fox jumps over the crazy dog. I think it's the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog.
Well, maybe in your world.
My dogs are not lazy.
We play by our own rules, Phil.
We're
well,
edgy.
When you use the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, then you're using all the letters in the alphabet, and that's what they teach you in grade school.
I'm not here typing.
And
you're... Oh, okay.
No, we're losing your phone call, Phil.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's too bad. Man. 503-733-2970. Take a seat at the back of the class, friend. 503-733-2970. Let us now kill some time while I find the mailman something. All right, thank you. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
A postman is the person in your neighborhood.
This is the clip they're going to play from the show someday when Chris really does go crazy and kill some people. He's
well,
all
especially if you keep making fun of his dead cat.
I wasn't. I was not making fun of the dead cat.
You know that cooler you saw last night? You know, my cat was about the same size as your dog.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Is that... Thank you. That sounds like a threat. Maybe I should
maybe I should
be alerting the authorities. At least I didn't say, like...
You don't hear Tim and I heckling him about his cat because we love our animals.
Oh, not today. I don't hear it today. Yesterday, I think, was a different story.
I didn't say anything.
Well, yesterday was a day of mourning.
Yes. Especially when Tim said, who's going to miss a cat? Why don't you just live with gang members? That was especially solemn.
I feel sorry for the expired feline.
Yes. Well, it's in a better place now. Anyway, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good today.
Okay, can you drop his level just a little bit, sir? That it's there's some weird thing where it's deafening me. Is what it's doing. All right. So now, are you on today? Or you off today? Because you have that weird. You have that 6-day shift that you weren't.
Yesterday was supposed to be my day off, but that's why I didn't go camping because they made me come in on my day off.
Well, okay. Well, we're gonna try to lighten your mood today by getting. I have here. No, wait, that's a lie. I have here. Here, Wolf. There, Castle. I have here in my hands, and this is from Oregon, by the way. This is one of the best stories. I can't even tell you how excited I am to read this story, and I don't think Tim knows about this story.
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Do you know which story I'm holding?
I wanted to step aside and not steal your thunder.
Thank you, Tim. That is mighty gracious. As my mother would say, that's mighty white of you, Tim Riley.
And I am awake.
we're all white here. We're all white.
You keep turning up Tim's microphone, Rick.
I do not. It's on right now.
That's because I just turned it on.
You're a liar. Why are you telling fibs there, Dylan? All right, so I have a fantastic story that I will get to here in short order. Coming up today, I believe we have... Do we have a Whitney watch?
We don't, but we can make
it. I think because there was that story that was about her, was it not?
Yes, there is.
All right, so coming up today, we have a Darwin watch, Geek watch, Whitney watch. We will talk a little bit about the Rockstar Supernova, which airs tonight at 10 p.m. We will have CNN radio correspondents Jim Roop, Ed McCarthy, and Bob Costantini. And then I will have this, the greatest story you've ever heard that takes place in Springfield, Oregon. So that's what's coming up today, my friend. Do you have that there, stenographer guy?
I do. I have a Whitney watch, a Darwin watch, a Geek watch, Rockstar, Jim Roop, Ed McCarthy, Bob Costantini, and the greatest story we've ever heard coming out of Springfield, Oregon.
Indeed. That is fantastic. That is all we're going to get to. And where is the push-up count as of now?
44.
All right. Now, by the end of today's program, that will have dropped because I will have gotten to all of these items, plus a large announcement that we are going to make here in just a few minutes. So in 2 minutes, we will have a big announcement which has nothing to do with reality television, nothing to do with a listener party, has nothing to do with snakes on any sort of object. So we will get to that here in just a few. Plus a brand new sounder for Tim Riley and his cavalcade of news. So we will get to all of that. We'll check in with you at the end of today's program and see where we are, Chris.
Okay.
All right, there you go. There's mailman Chris. Pardon me, I seem to have something in my throat. You just all talk amongst yourselves.
Button.
All right, there we go. Fantastic. Okay. So we have the announcement to make. We will play Tim Riley's new and improved news sounder, and then we will get to all of this. Also, I believe there's a better than average chance that Dennis Pitzenbarger for the Portland Tribune is going to be stopping by. Should we make the announcement here, or should we play the news sounder first?
Make the announcement now.
All right. Well, I was going to do a huge teasing intro to this, but there's not really any point. As they often say in radio, especially if you're me talking to Alan Davis last April, there's no easy way to say this. So I'm just going to come out and say it. So after a long time, really it has been years, of just fighting and digging in our heels and just refusing and just putting our head in the sand like an ostrich, it's sticking our fingers in our ears and humming London Bridge to ourselves and saying, no, 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 mustn't, no, no, no. We'd like to announce today, right here on this very fine radio program, that beginning next Monday, right here on AM 970, Solid State Radio, Now, somebody's going to ask me to name the percent, and I don't know what it is. Is it just 33? Sarah? The best thing is that you don't even try. It's just sort of a shrug. You're sort of a, I don't know. What can you do? Beginning next Monday, the Rick Emerson radio program goes from an action-packed 3 hours to an action-packed award-winning 4 hours in length.
I can't believe my ears.
That is a dear advertiser. I was shocked and appalled by the... that happens next Monday on this very fine radio program. Actually, it's actually a couple of changes. This program and Stephanie Miller, Stephanie Miller currently runs 6 to 9. Stephanie Miller is going to be extended by an hour as well. This radio program and the Stephanie Miller program will both be extended by 1 hour as of this coming Monday, the 28th. We will also have the exciting, thrill-packed return of Jim Cramer's Real Money. He'll be on the 10th. So as of Monday, this lineup on this radio station will be Stephanie Miller, 6 to 10, Jim Cramer, 10 to 11. This program will run 11 to 3 p.m., and then, of course, Likas, 3 to 7, Donna Mike, 7 to 11, John and Jeff, 11 to 3. Scotty J is typing in the screen, when to when now? I'm sorry, I'm sorry, Scotty J. I forgot you were there. Yes, as of Monday, by the way, you're in for an extra hour. Just so you know, in case anybody should ask, Scotty.
Well, he's here anyway, making coffee.
Well, there you go. Scotty really does get an A in knowing his place most of the time. So there you go. As of Monday, this program extends to 4 hours in length, which is a thing we've fought for a long time, and we've resisted, and we've pushed against it, and people have asked us about it. Our response has always just been, kind of a flat no, and I do agree that 5 hours would be too long, because at some point, remember Bruce Agler when we were at Fisher, and then at Entercom even, Bruce Agler said, you gotta be doing a five-hour show. And like I said, there's nobody anywhere, who wants 5 hours of this stupid goddamn radio program. Nobody anywhere. And don't call up and tell me you want 5 hours, because it's a lie. There's not even my mom wants to hear me talk for 5 hours. So as of Monday, though, this program will begin a four-hour daily broadcast. It's all very exciting.
My goodness, what would that extra hour be?
I can't even imagine. All right. Okay, we ready with Tim's... All right. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado...
We haven't done headlines yet.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry, I was so excited by this news that I abandoned my Matrix. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah Stillen. How are you today?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Are you awake?
Kind of.
Are you lying?
Well, I think I got way too much sleep last night. I got like 10 hours of sleep.
10 hours? When did you go to bed?
Like 11.
And then you slept till 9?
I guess
I'm going to figure that out on my own, along with the 33%. No, too much sleep will kill you. It's always good to get too little sleep. If you have to go one way or the other.
I got too little sleep for 2 years. I'm still catching up.
I'm just saying, all things being equal, if you get like 4 hours of sleep, that's a lot better than getting like 11 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
You can always tell when I get 11 hours of sleep, because then I'm just all loopy and groggy, and I don't know what the hell's going on, and it's just everything is like my thoughts are encased in some sort of gelatinous, like a jello-type substance. And it's like you're having to reach in and get your thoughts one at a time, and hose them off. It's just too little sleep I will take any time over too much sleep. Tim Riley is working on the following stories today for your edification.
Unloved right out of the womb. The mother of JonBenet Ramsey's admitted killer tried to kill him as a baby. A Pennsylvania snake expert claims snakes on the plane is misleading America. Tony Bennett claims the U.S. is culturally void and Osama loves Whitney.
Okay, so there you go. And so forth. It's 503-733-2970. I have no pithy observations or unique personal experiences to share with you in this segment of the program. So we're going to get right to this. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower, downtown Portland, Oregon, ABS presents the Ministry of Truth. Our top story, school teacher John Mark Carr waived extradition today, speeding his journey to Colorado to face charges for the 1996 slaying of child beauty queen JonBenet Ramsey. In the courtroom, Carr was read the 5 charges against him.
You are charged with 1 count of first-degree murder after deliberation, 1 count of first-degree felony murder, 1 count of first-degree kidnapping, one count of second-degree kidnapping, one count of sexual assault on a child.
I don't understand. So this isn't the actual arraignment, or is this just for the extradition?
Extradition.
I'm very confused by this. Let me play this again.
You are charged with one count of first-degree murder. After-
okay, by whom is he charged?
By whom is he charged?
I guess we could ask a... Wait, when am I... Where's my CNN prep sheet? Okay, so we have... I guess it's not until 1. So we have Ed McCarthy.
This is the state of Colorado. He has waived extradition to Colorado.
But that isn't... Okay, but they can't really be... I guess this is a legal question. I guess I can ask... we have Ed McCarthy from Boulder who's going to be on a 1 p.m. here. I don't understand what that means when they say that they actually are charging him with that, though, because it... I mean, are they really going to do that? Are they really going to haul him there and then charge him with the crime and put him on trial for it?
Mm-hmm.
But we all know he didn't do it. I mean, that's...
Too late now. It's on CNN.
They've already prepared the Chiron. They've already prepared the... wait, hold on. Carnage? What would they say? There's got to be something here. There's got to be a carific. Well, whatever. Well, okay, so there you go. And this was in California that this was happening, and then they're sticking him on a plane.
Yeah.
All right, so we're in Boulder, Colorado. Ed McCarthy's going to be there, and then later on, Jim Roop is in Los Angeles. We'll find out. If he was actually at the extradition hearing.
Meanwhile, this fellow's mother tried to kill him when he was a baby. Tara's mother, Patricia Lane Adcock, made a big round donut of kindling and put him in the middle of it. Says George McCray, who was also known as Cara's father, Wexford Carr, for 40 years. She just boxed the little baby in and tried to light it. John's older brother, Michael...
I don't understand.
She made a big round donut of kindling wood.
A big round donut? I'm sorry. I shouldn't be laughing and trying to set a baby on fire.
This isn't like killing a kitten in a cooler.
No, it's not. I'm just saying a big round donut of kindling is a funny phrase.
A big round donut...
So how old was he when this happened?
He was a toddler.
And she was just tired of having him?
Apparently so.
All right, and then how did it not happen? Did somebody intervene?
Well, John's older brother Michael came running in just before the flame started to combust the material.
Jesus.
Adcock was later committed to a mental institution.
Yes.
She died in 2001.
All right. Well, that's more credence to the this guy's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Theory. I mean, because if crazy runs in families, which it does, that lends a little more evidence to the he didn't do it, he's just making crap up. That certainly seeds for being unbalanced, by the way. Find out your mom tried to torture you when you were like 2.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, there you go.
Well, meanwhile, there's a sectarian conflict in Iraq, not a full-blown civil war. That's the view of Sir Robert Fry, the top British military commander in that country.
I think what we've got, if you look at the whole of Iraq at the present time, is a sectarian conflict, which is highly specifically defined in geographical terms.
Who is this?
Basil Fawlty, who's the British military in Iraq.
That's genius. He's from Barcelona. All right, with some guy. And you know, the thing is about, have you noticed this? The thing about British people is whenever they're talking about whatever, it always sounds like they're giving you a thinly veiled lecture. You know what I mean?
Somebody standing in front of a map with a pointer.
That's totally what it is. It doesn't matter what they're talking about, whether they're actually belittling you or condescending to you. That's how it comes across. Listen to this again.
I think what we've got, if you look at the whole of Iraq.
There's always sort of an implied, look, you thick American git. That's always, that sort of is the implication. It precedes all of their sentences.
I think what we've got, if you look at the whole of Iraq at the present time, is a sectarian conflict, which is highly specifically defined in geographical terms.
But we wouldn't expect you to know that in the colonies. And then they go off and have crumpets somewhere.
Meanwhile, the ultimate solution to...
Tim Riley's mic cracking up?
It is.
All right, hold on a second. Let's...
Did I give it a good shaking like a baby?
Please
put it in the middle of some kindling.
Did you really just say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Put it in a cooler and shut the lid tightly.
Okay, Tim.
All right.
No. Okay, let's everyone be quiet for a minute. I'm going to unplug Tim's microphone. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Let me just do a whole lot. This just in. Nothing is working at CBS. All right, there you go. I'm going to unplug Tim's microphone here.
Goodbye.
All right. And hold on a second. All right, there we go. All right, I have unplugged and blown on the connections for Tim's microphone. Let's see if this has any demonstrable effect.
Testing.
Okay.
Is he insane today?
The great Tim Holyoke. Okay. Well, there you go. So if you hear some sort of a crackle, it's not just that it's hot where you are. It actually is that there's something going wrong with Tim's. Wasn't this same thing happening like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Sarah, wasn't Tim's microphone acting this same way? It's the left channel.
Yeah, and I thought that it was fixed after you plugged it, you know, unplugged it.
I thought we did have it fixed, but apparently not so much. All right.
Well, I guess the engineers aren't here.
Okay. Well.
No, why would they be?
Why would you actually need them to come in and fix anything? All right. Well, let's plunge on ahead, and during the break, we'll have the microphone looked at.
How about if I hear microphones with Sarah Dillon?
How about we break now? Let's do that. Let's take a break here. We'll come back.
And everything will be the same.
We'll come back and continue to combat you with a problem that hasn't been solved. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini. Ed McCarthy coming up later on. CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop will talk about rock star Supernova. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. So, sorry. You'll need to write his levels a little bit. All right. This email says, 4 hours is going to be great. A whole new hour of poorly mixed microphones and Tim telling people to set their cats on fire.
I know. I think you just jinxed us. I guess as soon as we get a four-hour show.
I've never told anyone to set a cat on fire.
Well, that just sounds crazy.
Now you'll have a whole extra hour in which to do that. Right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Here's what's coming up later on. We got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Also, Ed McCarthy. In just a moment, we'll welcome Bob Costantini to the Rick Emerson Show. You know, the problem is that I lost my voice at Snakes on a Plane, and it still hasn't quite come back. And every day I'm in here kind of wearing it down further. So it's the hooting and hollering at Sam Jackson has done a little bit of a number on my vocal cords, I'm afraid. At 2:30, we're also going to have somebody who is at the Sunday night taping for Rockstar Supernova, and there's all kinds of drama and everything happening about that. So we got all of that coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, CNN radio correspondent. Scotty is typed up on the screen. Bob Costantini on a train. Are you actually on a train?
Yes, that's correct, Rick. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I really could have. If I'd known that earlier, I could have made some sort of Snakes on a Plane joke about you being on a train.
Did you get into the spirit of the movie?
Yeah, what's that?
Did you get into the spirit of the movie?
Oh, dude, I got to tell you, we have been all about Snakes on a Plane for like the last 18 months. And for the last 6 months that this show has been on the air, you've been hard-pressed to go more than a day, 2 days at the most, without hearing about that film. And so we did a little station event last Thursday. We did the premiere of Snakes on a Plane, which is last Thursday at 10 o'clock. And I have to tell you this. There's two things I know in this world. One is, that's a completely terrible and irredeemable movie with almost nothing to recommend it. The second thing is this. That is the single best movie-going theatrical experience I have ever had in my life, and I mean that sincerely. I'm 33. I've been going to see the movies since I was like 8, 9, 10 years of age. That is the single greatest movie-going night I have ever had. It could never be duplicated. It could never be matched. It could never be equaled. It could never be surpassed, ever. I don't care how long I live. I will never have another night at a movie theater quite as great as Snakes on an MFing Plane. By the same token, anybody who did not see it, if that opening night is screwed, because it's a terrible movie, and there's really no reason to watch it unless you're with a bunch of liquored up geeks.
Yeah, okay.
So there you go. That's a long answer to a short question, Bob.
Did you yell at the screen one?
Dude, we yelled when we went into the theater, we yelled when we all sat down, we yelled when the lights went off, we yelled at the previews. We yelled at the New Line logo. The first moment Sam Jackson's face was on the screen. The first moment there was a snake. The fifth moment there was a snake. The 50th moment there was a snake. Random bits of dialogue that had nothing to do with anything. It was one long, it was like a sort of reptilian Rocky Horror is what that was. So if anybody should ask, you tell them that Rick Emerson gives two strong thumbs up for that experience. So what do you want to train for? Are you going somewhere in particular?
Well, I'm going home. Never wanted to miss an opportunity to be with you guys, but the timing was that I'm supposed to be off at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And so I said, well, okay, I'll do it as long as I can be on the train and get home. I've actually got some other work to go do. Remember, I'm the fill-in guy.
See, but look at that. See, look at that. The power and pull of the Rick Emerson show is such that even half an hour past your scheduled clock-off time, here you are gracing us with your presence, Bob Costantini. Am I right when I read these numbers that say that, 32% of Americans now say they favor the war in Iraq? And frankly, I can't even believe it would be that high. But is that the right number?
Well, according to a CNN poll carried out by Opinion Research, it's 35% saying they favor the war in Iraq, and now it's 61% saying they oppose it. That's the highest opposition noted in any CNN poll. And frankly, it's doesn't leave a lot of room for people who are ambivalent about it.
I was just going to say, who are the people? That's who I want to talk to. I want to find somebody out there who is undecided about the Iraq War or George W. Bush.
Yeah, it's a difficult poll for no doubt the president to read. And in a sense, it had something to do. It was a background for what he said yesterday at his news conference, that he understands the war is draining the American psyche. He realizes that this issue has affected the way Americans view him, as well as his overall war on terror and those kinds of things, and it's affecting him downward, if you will. Even though the same survey does give a little bit of uptick in his approval rating, moving it to 42% approval rating.
Does it? And this is the thing that we're curious about on the show. If his approval rating is somehow going up, does it indicate? Why? I mean, political persuasion aside, I just can't see a whole lot of public evidence that he's doing anything right, at least not the way over the American people right now. Does it say what he's doing that the American public does approve of?
I've seen no specific breakdown out of it in terms of issues other than Iraq from this poll. That's what I understand happened. And actually, we're starting to pull away here. It could very well be that a lot of Americans feel that the economy is doing relatively well at this point. That's perhaps the other big issue that has a lot to do with how Americans view the president's approval rating. That's generally the way it works.
Well, all right. Well, I suppose that this is all going to shake out later on this year, and then, of course, as we get closer to 2008, because it does seem like they're going to be in a little bit of a tight spot if they're going to try to use the war to get any kind of a vote out of anybody, because it seems like that's a losing strategy at this point.
Well, the president has some issues in terms of believability.
Did you really just say that?
And let me just give you another example of what it will perhaps mean to the GOP. Ask which party's candidates they would vote for if the elections were held today. 52% of respondents say the Democratic Party, and 43% said the GOP. But it's always good to remember that in congressional elections, you vote for your member of Congress per se, not how you feel the party is affiliated with, or he or she is affiliated.
I just want to go back to a moment ago when you said that the president has some, quote, believability issues.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Bob Costantini?
It says here that fewer than half of the respondents, just 44%, say they believe President Bush is honest and trustworthy, and 54% do not.
All right, which is one of those polls that makes you simultaneously glad and horrified to be an American. So, all right, there you go. My friend, enjoy your train ride. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. We will speak with you very soon, my friend.
Yes, thank you, Rick. You're bearing with me on the train.
Not at all. The pleasure's all ours, Bob. There you go. Thank you. CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini. Look at that, man. The guy got off work 35 minutes ago, and he's on a train just waiting to speak to us.
I always learn something from these conversations.
No, it's true. And okay, can I? Is it time for me to read this story? Can I just read this and get this out of the way?
Yeah, I have no idea what it is, so go for it.
Okay, this is from your alma mater, Sarah. This is from Coin News 6.
Oh, boy.
Dateline Springfield, Oregon. Now, the payoff really comes, sir. This is sort of a story.
Is it Cor Harlan? Did he report it?
He doesn't say, actually. This is just one of those, I think this might have just been pulled off the AP or something. This is one of those stories that builds a little bit. Headline, man caught taking pictures up women's skirts. Cell phone allegedly held under skirts. Police in Springfield, Oregon have charged a man with placing his cell phone under women's skirts and taking pictures. Police first responded Saturday morning to a call from a woman at a shopping center. She said she was standing at the cosmetics counter when she felt something on her leg. She looked down and saw a man holding a cell phone camera under her skirt. Okay, that's just weird on a lot of levels, because it's a guy crawling around the Mac counter on all fours, clutching his Verizon, not Verizon, I'm sure they're Verizon customers. It does make you wonder, though. Officers caught the man Sunday after another complaint. He told officers he'd been using his cell phone to take pictures at Walmart. Why in the name of God? Oh. If you were going to pick women up whose skirts you wanted to look, why? I mean, is it just that the women at Walmart move more slowly? Is that what that is?
Well, I think there's a better selection.
Okay. Selection is, of course, what they pride themselves on at Walmart. After Walmart, he went to Target, Fred Meyer, and other stores. He was just kind of working the whole room. Jeremy Charles Seaman has been charged with invasion of privacy and harassment. Both misdemeanors.
That's the punchline?
It's not a punchline. It's a man's name, Sarah. And I will not have you ridiculing.
How's it spelled?
S-E-A-M-A-N.
Oh.
Jeremy Charles Seaman. Charged with invasion of privacy and harassment. Both misdemeanors.
Well, it's a nice little break from dead cats in the cooler stories.
Here's Tim Riley.
So let's get back to that sectarian conflict in Iraq. Not a full-blown civil war.
No, of course not. Please. No.
Our friend, this British official, says the ultimate solution to sectarian violence is up to the Iraqis.
And this is cut four? Three?
The way this will be fixed is by Iraqis recognizing their differences and reconciling them through a political process.
And that means what, exactly?
I don't know.
Let's listen again, shall we?
The way this will be fixed is by Iraqis recognizing their differences and reconciling them through a political process.
This is sort of a the more you know kind of a thing, where they all have to get together and then Alan Jackson needs to go sing some sort of touching song. This guy sounds a little bit like if Richard Quest was calmer. And like if you were able to... You said you saw Richard Quest.
I saw Richard Quest on TV today.
Was it today or was it last night?
No, today.
Well,
9 o'clock this morning.
On CNN?
On CNN.
Now, is this now at 9 a.m. or are they still doing CNN International at 9 a.m.?
I believe it's called The World.
The World.
Yeah.
So this was not an American television
No,
program.
This is from London. He had one with a British accent sitting next to him reading up the teleprompter also.
Man, I got to tell you, you gave me this GQ magazine, was it about a month ago? You had brought in a copy of GQ, which I was reading because it has this great article on Richard Quest. And Richard Quest, and for those who do not necessarily know who he is, you have heard him many times on this program as the... do we have the Richard Quest sound? We don't have the outgone, sacked, fired, or the snicky, snacky, wacky, cracky. The only... I think we only have one left from him. It survived...
I don't even know... Oh!
This is...
right across his posterior...
Fantastic. And he's got huge teeth. He looks like a Norman Rockwell painting. He's very sort of ruddy-cheeked, very tall, you know what he looks like? He looks like a sort of British Tony Robbins. Really thin, really tall, jet black hair, very intense, kind of a tightly coiled spring kind of a vibe going on, and then gigantic teeth. And he just sits there and just positively vibrates with energy when he does the news. But he's way too weird for American audiences to really glom onto. He's just...
No, he looks like a horse with glasses.
he's far too wound up. Fantastic. I got to make Richard Quest a keyword on my TV and see what sort of things that end up saving. Speaking of which, did anybody watch the Spike Lee thing last night?
No, I forgot.
I got home so late. Laura and I had this whole thing, and we got home so late, and I wasn't able to watch it. So I'm not even sure if it taped, because I did I went to TiVo.com and tried to tape it via the internet. But there's like a 90-minute window sometimes where it's like it... If you don't set it to record via the internet early enough, it doesn't always catch it. So I'm unclear about whether I got that Spike Lee documentary or not. So, all right. Anyway, I got to make Richard Quest a keyword. Note to self. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the Phoenix Company is hoping a new internet social community will be a hit with parents across the country.
Oh, nothing sounds successful like an internet-based community for parents.
MommyTalk.com is being launched today. President Travis Moss says it'll allow parents to meet new people or share photos with relatives in a family-safe environment.
What really differentiates us from MySpace is the ability to market and be geared strictly towards parents.
Okay, that was
there's
first of all.
There's just as slutty mommies out there as there are, you know, 21-year-old girls.
It is true. And listen, you hear the bad edit right in the middle of that soundbite?
What really differentiates us from MySpace
right
is the ability to market and
right there.
Geared strictly towards parents.
So this is MySpace for people in the suburbs.
Yes, MommyTalk.com. They're trying to create a family-oriented version of another well-known online community.
My girlfriend was kind of addicted to this MySpace. I took a look at
this MySpace.
All the services that they provided and then went to my sister-in-law and asked her if this would be something that she would be interested in using as a parent herself.
Oh, God. Can you imagine a less interesting place to be hanging out on?
We need a MommySpace.com site.
We should totally create one. Is it up now? MommyTalk.com? Sarah? Pleased to be checking now to see if MommyTalk.com is up.
MommyTalk.com. Everyone go there.
People can, you know, have kids, don't have kids, whatever. As a show, we have all kind of made our decision to be child-free.
Welcome to MommyTalk.com.
Oh, look at that terrible font.
Lorraine, the original mommy talker.
Oh, God damn.
Oh, is that Lorraine?
Oh, and you know what? This is a bunch of, you know what this is, too? This is totally a bunch of women who have, as their, like, their profile quotes have, like,
what are your three most favorite things? Pizza, shopping, and quality time.
No zucchini?
And they all, what do you mean by that, Tim Riley?
Well, that's a popular thing that mommies would prepare, wouldn't it? Huh?
What type of vehicle do you drive? An Expedition. What do you like most about it? It's big.
It gets 5 miles to a gallon.
It will haul my enormous ass around without difficulty. And you know that all of these quotes, these women, they are all tagged at the end by like something from a Shakira song, or like something from that hideous You're Beautiful song. So that's with it. All of these profiles are going to end with something from Dave Matthews.
Oh, Mommy God, talk. Not only do they have their own private profile, then they make profiles for their children underneath their profile.
That's going to be a very bad thing. That's going to have a very bad ending.
Seriously. There really is no good at the end of that road.
No.
Oh, my God. All right. There you go. MommyTalk.com. Go there now. Hours of fun, kids. Okay. Let's move on, shall we?
Well, getting married is as much of a tradition in Vegas as slot machines and buffets, but when the urge to merge comes in the wee hours, you're going to have to wait. The county government said that starting next week, its Marriage License Bureau will no longer be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The graveyard shift is being scrapped. Would-be brides and grooms will be able to apply only between 8 a.m. and midnight, 7 days a week.
Well, don't they have a whole industry based on the fact that you can go get married at 3 a.m. Britney Spears style?
Yep.
That's like that little White Chapel, which is online, which you can watch people getting married 24 hours a day there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's just not right.
Nope.
Slowly but surely they're stripping all of the fun out of this country, which I call home. I am not happy. Is that a picture from Mommy Talk?
No.
Oh, I was going to say. That's pretty hot, actually. Okay, but that's not from Mommy Talk.
No, that was Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, okay. That's my fun. All right. Okay.
Not maybe a mommy that I know of.
Maybe you can find an exciting breastfeeding article.
Oh.
Yeah.
So do you have tips on breastfeeding and your favorite recipes
what?
To put on there?
Your favorite recipes?
Yeah.
For breastfeeding?
No, for food.
Oh, okay. Like, how many ways are there? And really, let me ask you this, and I'm not actually asking this question. I'm just sort of asking this rhetorically, which is, how many tips does breastfeeding really... That's like needing tips on how to pee, don't you think?
I just could never do
that. I'm trying to go to the bathroom, but I can't quite seem to get the hang of it. Can you please tell me how to urinate? I'm not really sure how it's supposed to work. It seems like breastfeeding is one of those tab A into slot B repeat kind of a thing.
It's so gross to think that your body's full of milk that like your baby's suckling on.
Are there any recipes with Toll House cookies on there?
Why would you say that? I don't need to hear that phrase. Okay, here's Tim Riley.
Time for Whitney Watch.
Here's your Whitney Watch. All right. Thank you. Speaking of suckling.
Yeah!
fantastic.
Well, Whitney Houston has many male admirers. But even
No, she does not. She has many meal dealers. There's a difference. There's people who admire the fact that she's so addicted to their product. That's about it.
Well, but even she must be surprised to learn that one of them is America's number one enemy. The New York Post reports that Sudanese poet-novelist Kola Boof, who claims to have been a former sex slave of Osama bin Laden, says the terrorist has a real soft spot for Whitney. In Boof's autobiography, The Diary of a Lost Girl, she quotes Osama saying, quote, "He explained to me that to possess Whitney, he would be willing to break his color rule and make her one of his wives," unquote.
He would be willing to what? In his what?
Color rule?
Yeah, apparently he doesn't like people the flesh tone of Whitney Houston, whatever that might be.
what skin color do you suppose she has now?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out.
Depends on what kind of mold is growing
probably
over her body.
Probably bloated in blue.
She's just sort of a hint of Belushi right now. It's genius. Somebody really ought to market a lot. Okay, here's... Attention, you kids, with your kooky marketing ideas.
It's Chateau Marmont Blue.
That's what I'm just going to say that. What is that place with all the goth clothes on Hawthorne by Noah's...
Metro?
Is it Metro? Is that the place?
The one on the corner.
Yeah, not the place. That I always think it's Red Light, but it's Metro. They should totally market like goth crayons, where it's totally like, you know, where instead of like white and red, it's sort of like, you know, it's all like, you know, hemoglobin, you know, hemorrhage. That's a great idea. Crayons, because the goth kids...
Crayons?
But the colors would all be like morbid colors. It would all be like bloated blue or whatever. It would all be like moldy green, like they did with that Urban Decay lipstick. Because, you know, the goth girls are all into the weird. They all like to do the weird thing where they like, you know, they're grown-up girls, but they're childlike. And so it's like, oh, I'm an adult, but I've got a lunchbox. And so they should totally be marketing... They should be marketing goth crayons where the color references...
This is all Urban Decay. It's like shotgun asphyxia.
That's what I'm...
Shattered.
Okay, see?
Smog, yeah.
That's totally what they should... What they've done with makeup, they should totally do with crayons. The goth girls would totally buy it, and it comes in like a little black box. And there goes. Another free marketing idea for the mind of Rick Emerson. Rick, this email says, delighted to hear that you're going to be on for an extra hour. I really do love you in a prison sex sort of way.
Aw.
You shouldn't have. Let's see. Rick, I'm just trying to cover the bases. Did you, in fact, see the William Shatner roast? If you did not, I will be happy to be forwarding you one... Oh, I did. It's from below. I taped it, but I haven't watched it. Has anybody watched the Shatner roast?
I have not, no.
He was...
I heard that Andy Dick was just crazy.
Well,
licking everyone's faces.
Didn't we have a story, or did we ever read it on the air, or did we just read it off the air?
They taped it like a week and a half ago.
I swear to God, because the headline... I won't even tell you what the headline was, but... The headline was a pun on his name, and then noting that he had run around apparently licking many people in the room. So, it was something about Andy Dick running around at the William Shatner roast, and I guess forcibly licking people on the face. So the Shatner thing happened on, I guess it would be Sunday, and it's on my TiVo, but I still have not watched it. So, anyway, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
So that ends the Whitney Watch.
All right, there you go. There's your Whitney Watch for Tuesday. I'm going to miss her when she's dead. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the world's finest newspaper, the London Sun, claims Russian gangsters unhappy with a well-prepared pop icon Madonna will bring her sacrilegious confessions tour to Moscow next month, have sent her sinister warnings that she, along with her kids Lourdes and Rocco, could be their kidnapped targets.
I feel so sorry for any kid who's named Rocco. Also, this story was completely planted, just like the story that was in the... You know, the Drudge Report had that thing a few weeks back about how her show was apparently shocking and sacrilegious, and everybody was outraged. And you know, that story lasted for like one day.
Yeah.
Because it was when she came out on the sort of disco ball cross thing, which she did that when you were in Vegas, right?
Oh, and that's great. That disco ball's the best thing I've seen.
Everybody was appalled for like an hour and a half, and then the story just went away. Would you like to, Tim Riley, would you like to share with the audience the exciting offer that you were given this morning in your email inbox?
I don't know what to say. Well, I got this offer from Ticketmaster, my opportunity to bid on Celine Dion tickets.
Not to purchase them.
Not to purchase
just
them.
Just to bid my on the chance to have them. Starting bid?
$250
each for a single ticket. Who in the name? And, you know, here's the thing, is the only reason they do that is because the past experience has obviously shown them that someone out there will pay $250 for a Celine Dion ticket.
Okay, $250 is a Madonna ticket.
I would pay that. I would pay $250.
I did that last time.
Yeah, I'd pay that. Hell, here's how retarded I am. I paid $250 for a Paul Simon ticket. That's how dumb I am. So
without Garfunkel?
Yeah, I was a fool. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. This is when Paul Simon played at the... He was touring for whatever that hideous album was he put out a few years ago that nobody bought. The one right before... Because there's a well-established...
There have been several that nobody bought.
There's a well-established pattern with these guys. It's like the Don Henley syndrome, where you are part of a band or a duo that is successful. You strike out on your own. You put out a whole series of solo records. And you grow accustomed to solo success. Paul Simon had many solo records, one after another, that sold very well. Don Henley had many solo records, one after the other, sold very well. As soon as they have one that tanks, bam, they go crawling back to what made him famous in the first place. So it was with Paul Simon. But the album was called The One, I think. It was another terrible, like, you listen to how multicultural I am. It was another bad knockoff of Graceland. But I saw him at the Gorge, and at that point, he had been swearing for years. I should have known that it was a lie, right? Because they would say, like, are you ever going to get back together with Paul Simon? And no, I will never tour with Paul Simon again, or with Art Garfunkel. Which you should know is a lie, because it's exactly the same thing that Kiss said. It's exactly the same thing the Eagles said. It's the same thing everybody says. And then they always get back together, and they soak you. But I believed him like a fool. And so I saw him and Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson was actually really great. But I paid $250 for a front row, not even front row, like third row at the Gorge. Brian Wilson comes out and does like a 30-minute set, which was great. And then he leaves, and then Paul Simon comes out, and it's just... Do you ever pay a lot of money for a show where you've waited in line for a show or something, and it's like the artist comes out and they start playing, and they're not even halfway through the first song, and you realize that it has just been the worst mistake of your life. You realize, like, why did I do this? He gets halfway through the first song, and it's the first tip-off that it's going to be a bad show is that it's Paul Simon and like 700 musicians behind him, which lets you know that it's not going to be any of the cool stuff you want to hear. It's not going to be any of the Simon and Garfunkel stuff. It's just going to be endless variations on You Can Call Me Al for 2.5 hours, which is exactly what it was.
And me and Julio down by the school here?
No.
I don't want to
wait. We kept waiting for a Simon and Garfunkel song, and here's what he did. About halfway through this 2.5-hour abomination, he did a 10-minute medley of 3 Simon and Garfunkel songs, which he rushed through by himself as quickly as possible. Like you could sense the whole vibe was, let's get it over with. And that was it. And meanwhile, we're sitting there having paid I don't even want to tell you with parking how much it cost for Laura and I to both go see Paul Simon at the Gorge. But the worst part is we're sitting there and just feeling our wallets getting lighter as this concert is going on, just surrounded by yuppies in like tortoise shell glasses. You know, and just endless BMWs in the parking lot. And here's the other thing. Look, I don't mean to knock anybody because I know we have people of all ages who listen to this radio program. But there is sort of... And I know that I, too, will fall into this category as I age, even though I am now only 29. I know that as I grow older...
Wait till you get to 37.
I will fall into this category.
I think you haven't reached the 30s yet, Rick.
There's something particularly sad and
about
pathetic,
lying about
I
your
think...
Age.
Yes, about shaving years off your age in the entertainment industry. There's something particularly pathetic about faux rebellion when it comes from baby boomers. You know what I'm talking about? Because there's that line, and I forget what the Paul Simon song is, but there's that line in that one Paul Simon song where he says,
I am a rock, I'm an island.
No. No. Rock feels no pain. It's where he says that line about, I ducked outside and smoked myself a J. And it's just like endless fat baby boomers in their, like, bad tortoiseshell glasses and Izod shirts or whatever it is they wear now.
Smoking opium, listening to...
No, and they're all just sort of doing the, woo, smoking a J. And it's so horrifying.
It's one of those embarrassing moments.
All of those, like, bad... It's like every big chill.
They sucked in those guts for, like, 2 seconds.
And for just a brief, sparkling moment, they were young once again. It was so sad. And it does give you an indication of what it's going to be like for me... And like the Chris Nevens of the world, 20 years from now when we're seeing Jane's Addiction at the Gorge for $300. And the Perry film makes some heroin joke, we're all like, woo! heroin, woohoo! I was at Lollapalooza and just totally holding forth in a tiresome, tedious fashion about crap that no one cares about anymore.
Singing Jane Says with a Rockette stamping.
Totally. I don't want to make it like I'm bagging on local blogger Chris Sneathan, who runs Dave Navarro is a gigantic douche.com. But
I'm sure he appreciates the publicity.
I'm sure he does. Well, you know, I tried, now that I'm totally off point, I tried to write this post because I'm a kind of a registered, whatever. He gave me a little account there so I can write a post at Dave Navarro is a gigantic douche.com. Because he started that site, and he gave me an account so I could write some stuff about it. And I tried to write a post last night, and I ended up scratching it. It couldn't really come together because it kept coming off like I was making fun of Chris Sneathan himself, and I'm really not. But I know that his hatred of Dave Navarro largely stems from the fact that he grew up as a big Jane's Addiction fan, and he saw Jane's Addiction kind of back in the day when they were the absolute gold standard for alternative cool. And you are nodding your head, Tim Riley, as though you were a Jane's Addiction fan back in the day.
Back in the old K-Rock days, living
in LA. Is
that
true? You were a Jane's Addiction fan? I never would have pegged you as a Jane's Addiction
fan.
Everyone
was during that period of time. She lived.
See, but everybody was but me. And that was like 89, 90, 91, and all of my friends, because I had a lot of friends who were sort of drama nerds, and, you know, they were all really into Jane's Addiction.
Like Clerks.
Yeah, and I was totally not, because even at that point, I was still so into Metallica, Megadeth, Guns N' Roses. I was still just such a metalhead that I couldn't get with the Jane's Addiction thing. And so as a result, I never went through that hero worship of Perry Farrell and Dave Navarro and all of those guys in Jane's Addiction, but Chris Sneathan did, and I know that's what pains him so badly about Rockstar Supernova. He is so filled with anguish about Rockstar Supernova because we were at Dante's a couple weeks ago. This is what prompted him to create this website about Dave Navarro, this Dave Navarro is a gigantic douche.com. He was going on about Dave Navarro and what a tool he is, and I'm like, yeah, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, you don't understand, man. You weren't there in 91. You didn't see Lollapalooza. He used to be cool. And, you know, so I can already see the future, man. I already know what it's going to be like when Jane's Addiction is playing the Hard Rock, and those Golden Circle tickets are like $195, and with that you get like a special folding chair with Perry Farrell's face on it. I can already see how that's going to unfold, so... Anyway, Paul Simon, and I had some point there. I don't know how we got into Paul Simon.
Dave Navarro and Wayne Newton.
because they tried to tell you Celine Dion tickets for $250. Not
fine.
Even $250. The opening bid on a Celine Dion ticket was $250. Is this to see her her Coliseum thing in Vegas?
Yeah. You know, if I thought she was on her deathbed like Whitney, I might consider it, but she doesn't appear to be in ill health at the moment.
The thing about Celine Dion is it's not even that she's bad. Like, I would almost pay that for somebody who was entertainingly bad. Like, Wayne Newton, there's part of me that would almost pay to see Wayne Newton just because it's like, how much longer can that guy possibly live? You know? And I want to go see him hand out a sweaty scarf to a fat woman in the front row. I kind of want to go see that because it's part of the Vegas experience. With Celine Dion, it's not even that she's bad. It's just that she's so unbelievably bland. Paying $250 to see Sheryl Crow, you know? She's not great. She's not terrible. She's just kind of uninteresting to me. So, anyway. Scotty, I can't see anything on the screen here. So if this is somebody important, they're going to have to hold, I think, because I think we're breaking. Are we breaking sound?
By golly, there's nothing on that screen.
It's Ed McCarthy. Should we take Ed now?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, live from Boulder, Colorado. CNN radio correspondent. Out on the main streets. Gumshoeing it. Finding the true scoop in the straight story. Ed McCarthy. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Yourself, Rick?
I'm okay. I got a little bit of a gravelly voice today, but I'm trying to make it work for me by just speaking everything as though it's a dialogue from a film noir. So what are you going
to
do?
I'm the same way. I'm starting to kind of lose it a little bit here. I guess maybe because I've been doing it so many hours in a row, but, you know, we're not trying to look for sympathy here, you know?
Well, you got that the altitude thing to deal with there, right? Aren't you in Boulder, Colorado?
Sure.
Like, it's not like Denver, but Boulder, Colorado, you've got that. You're way above sea level there.
Yeah.
And then people... People laugh at that kind of thing, but I remember moving to Salt Lake, and the first 2 months I lived in Salt Lake, I lost my voice every single day because of the altitude and because it gives you such a weird a difference in the air's humidity there. So your voice will start to crack after a while there.
Well, that's what's going on then.
All right, so let us talk about our good friend John Mark Carr, who grows crazier seeming by the day.
Yeah.
Where we were asking this earlier. In fact, let me find this sound bite. Now, this is from his extradition hearing in Los Angeles. Now, this is the, let me play a little bit of this.
You are charged with one count of first-degree murder after deliberation, one count of first-degree felony murder, one count of first-degree kidnapping, one count of second-degree kidnapping, one count of sexual assault on a child.
Okay, now, when they say he is charged with that, I mean, I know this sounds a little, this sounds a little obtuse, but what does that mean? Does that mean that, like, the people, as they say in Colorado, have actually charged him with being the one who did it?
They have not actually charged him yet. You're kind of splitting hairs because what we have is something that they're holding him on. These are the charges they're holding him on. This today was the extradition deal where, you know, well, he could have fought it, and it might have taken weeks to get him back to Boulder, or to get him to Boulder, maybe right. For the first time ever. Who knows? I mean, right. he may not have ever been here before. We don't know that yet. We also don't know what all the prosecutors are holding here. They're not showing their cards yet because everything is sealed. But anyway, they're going to, you know, it's a kind of a secret deal to get him into court in Los Angeles there. A lot of security for this guy. And it's going to be the same thing here. They're going to bring him in some vehicle with the dark glass, and they're going to shoot him right through the garage door, and that's going to be it.
Now, does this, let me ask you this. Does this mean that in Colorado, I mean, if you had to place your bet right here, are they going to charge him?
Oh, yeah. They'll be in court, and then they'll formally make those charges here. They'll take him from the Boulder jail down to the regular court complex that they have here, even though they have a courtroom that they could use within the jail. But apparently they're going to do that because of all the intense media coverage here.
Well, it seems like, I mean, the amount of news that came out about this guy today is just stunning. First of all, we found out this, and I'm assuming this is true, this is horrible. Is it true that his email address, his personal email address, is the date of JonBenet Ramsey's death? That it's like December 26, 1996, at AOL.com or whatever?
He had something like that. He had a private email address and a public email address. So they've been tracking down all of that. And, I just wonder what they really have as far as a match. I mean, you know, with the DNA and all of that, if they have anything that matches. You know, they may have a lot more than we think. But I got a kick out of all these attorneys now that, first of all, it was confession. You know, he was confessing. Now I've got all these attorneys that are interested in jumping into this thing, and a lot of them will say, oh, I'll work for free. Well, why? Because they get all that publicity.
Sure.
Come in.
Sure.
And so, you know, now they're saying, he did not make a confession. He made statements when he was in Thailand.
Well, I mean, his ex-wife is still saying that she was with him the entire time.
Exactly, in Alabama.
Yeah.
So, in the family, his family speaking out saying that he couldn't possibly have been the guy. So, you know, for now, these attorneys are saying he's highly intelligent. He's not a nutty guy. You know, he's very lucid. And these are the statements you're hearing now from the attorneys that are trying to make their case.
So this is exactly the sort of case that frustrates the hell out of me, simply because I'm not a guy. I don't like intangibles. I don't like things that are sort of fuzzy. I like things that are very binary and easy to understand. And the things that are just gray areas, they just drive me crazy. And it just seems like, on the one hand, you've got this guy insisting that he did it, and it sounds like they're going to charge him with it and try to put him on trial. But on the other hand, it seems like there's a pretty large mountain of circumstantial evidence that he didn't do it. And it drives me batty. Because let me just tell you this. Here's the worst possible outcome here. The worst possible situation is that they convict him, and yet half the people are convinced that he still didn't do it. That will just drive me bonkers, because then it will just be this... It'll just be this Loch Ness monster of a case that haunts me for the rest of my life as this unresolved thing.
Well, you know, these guys, based on what happened nearly 10 years ago when they botched it and things didn't work out very well, they want to get it right this time, you can guarantee.
All right. Let's see. This is this Colin? All right, Ed, hang on for just a second. Don't go anywhere. This is Colin. Colin, you have a question for CNN Radio correspondent Ed McCarthy in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, the question is, not that are they going to charge him, but is he going to be pleading guilty to these charges? Is that the whole deal?
That's a good question, too, because based on the way he was talking in Thailand, you would think so. But then again, if you remember, they were asking him all kinds of other questions that he had. I have no comment on that. So, you know, who knows what's going on? You know, if he got his 15 seconds of fame, maybe he's going to say not guilty this time.
Well, let me ask you this. So, I guess I should know how the justice system works, but I've never been on trial for killing anybody. So, if he goes in and pleads guilty, do we just skip right to the bottom of the page where they sentence him?
Well, yeah, that probably would seem likely, but I would think if you have a trial, I mean, you know, of course, if you plead guilty, case closed, but I can't see how that's going to happen. I think there's got to be a trial here. I think they've got to present it. If you get a public defender or any kind of a defender, and it looks like it won't be a public defender this time because they've got a couple of hotshot lawyers that are ready to jump in here, these guys want to keep that publicity going for a long time, and they're going to say, you're going to plead not guilty.
Well, that's my question, is if he's one of these guys who he just seems so bent on telling everybody he did it, it's one of those really, it's like the Manson trial had all kinds of problems like this, where, you know, the lawyers and the defendant are just seemingly at loggerheads about what they want to do. And if this, what's fascinating about this, and people, I know people think that we're superficial and shallow and whatever following this case, but you know what, I don't care what anybody thinks. Interesting is interesting, and fascinating is fascinating. And I do find the legal machinations here to be really compelling, because if this guy is just bent on pleading guilty, but then you've got a lawyer who is bent on him pleading not guilty, then you set up this real, immovable object, irresistible force kind of a thing, which is just, I mean, I just can't wait to see how that plays out.
No, exactly. And then what will happen, the defense lawyer is going to say, well, you know, here it is. He made these comments, but here are the inconsistencies, boom, and you guys don't have a case, and then he's going to put the onus on Boulder.
Right. That was Colin. Let's get, we've got one more here. Terry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Ed McCarthy. What's up? Terry.
Yes.
Hey, what's up, man? What do you got?
Oh, hey, thank you. This is kind of an old question, but with all due respect, Ed, I mean, why should we as a public care about something like this?
Boo, bad question.
No, really. I mean, the fact is that this is a 10-year-old case of a little white girl that whose parents put her up as a mantelpiece, and with any other situation in this country, nobody would really care, but. You know, it just seems to me that the media attention to this is just so out of place compared to, again, I guess back to my core question, why should I really care about this?
Thank you, Larry. I'll answer.
Rick, I'm going to disagree with you on that. I really can't blame him, honestly. Sometimes
you'll note that. By the way, he hung up. He didn't actually.
He could hear what I'm saying. I really, you know, there are so many people that I've talked to in Boulder that feel the same way that he does. I mean, he's not alone. The media really, the point that I thought was just absolutely ludicrous was when they were doing breaking news with spots on TV about what the guy was eating on the plane.
Right, right.
So, I have a tendency to get a little bit queasy in the stomach with some of the coverage, too.
Now, see, and I don't care. I just, you know, that's the thing. I really don't care, and I don't mean that in, like, a cynical, jaded way. I guess what I'm saying is this, and you... clearly, that guy was just taking a break from posting on a message board somewhere and typing out something angrily, angrily in all caps and putting a wacky smiley face behind it and just took a moment to call us. But here's the thing about that. Here's why I don't care about the media focusing on JonBenet Ramsey. Because it's a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's what? It's 168 hours a week or something like that. Really, by definition, any story you cover is at the exclusion of 5,000 other stories. I mean, it's a zero-sum game. One cannot cover anything. And I do firmly believe, as I believed with O.J., that there are cases that are microcosmic. And I know that we're getting kind of serious here for just a dumb radio show in Portland, but I got to tell you, there are cases, I believe, that are microcosmic because they represent larger things in society and they represent larger issues. And frankly, that they're just compelling in a very human sense. O.J. was certainly like that. The Menendez case was certainly like that. And this case is certainly like that. And I know he made the obligatory little white girl comment, which, again, is sort of been the go-to phrase that everybody uses whenever there's a news story covered that they don't really care about. But anybody who says that there are not compelling human issues in this case is on crack. So screw that guy.
Okay.
Well, there you go. I mean, I know you, as a representative of CNN, I know you can't say screw that guy, but I'll say it. You know? And I think he might have been calling us by mistake, by the way. I think he might have been thought he was tuning into a different radio program if he's wondering why we're not compelling, covering the hard issues of the day.
No, I know, but, you know, I see his point. So, I mean, honest to God, I don't think the media is perfect. I mean, all the time, and far from it. So, you know, it's an interesting story. A lot of people maybe in Boulder, you know, are fed up with it because they live near that house and they don't want these satellite trucks here. They want their community back.
Sure.
But you know, it's true. I mean, you know, you can see some of the saturation of this thing, and but it is it's fairly interesting. So you're going to have, it's, you know, maybe 60-40 mix, maybe 50-50. But it's,
yeah, you know, these people who operate under the assumption that somehow everything that has to be covered on the that there is no place for compelling human stories on the news. It's like, you know what, just go, you know, go do grassroots petitioning for a libertarian candidate somewhere, you know. Just people. Seriously, that's totally what it is. It's just a bunch of guys sitting in a basement somewhere posting on a binary news group. Let's get one more, Ed, and then I know you're kind of under the gun, so we'll get one more call here, and then we'll kind of wrap it up. And
yes, hello?
Jim, hey, you're on with Ed McCarthy. What do you got, brother?
It was the speculation is that he's pleading, you know, to get out of this Thailand prison, and what if he... What if the charges come up and he pleads not guilty? Then what we do? Because extradite him back to Thailand?
Thailand. He was, because he was deported from Thailand.
Right.
So they didn't, or expelled him, you know, whatever they want to call it, whatever the term is. But no, he's certainly not going to go back to Thailand.
So was he wanted for something in Thailand?
No.
Okay.
Matter of fact, he was not.
All right. Okay. So if he either. They either don't charge him or he gets off in Boulder, then he does, he just walks, right? It's free and clear.
He could walk, but I just wonder if he's going to, because they seem to be taking a lot of interest in this guy to be bringing him back here. So I think the district attorney's office has really done their homework on this one. We don't know, but I can guarantee you they must have something.
Well, I got to tell you, it's like the second Rodney King case and the second O.J. case. That they know they can't swing and miss a second time, or it's just the people burn that city down. I mean, it's going to go. The town of Boulder will just rise up, and just there will be a revolt if they screw this twice in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got everybody coming back too for school, so it's getting kind of busy here too.
I'd like to just leave you with it, because I know we've had that. This conversation has taken a lot of twists and turns. Ed, I'd just like to leave you with this thought.
Get off my lawn!
There you go. A little Ed McCarthy there. That's, I believe that is a get off my lawn courtesy of you.
Get off my lawn! Hey, there you go.
I believe Scotty pulled that out of a phone call you made earlier last week.
Or no prestigia, the Italian guy. No prestigia.
That's right. You were talking about the guy who lived on your block. So there you go.
That's right.
All right. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Enjoy Boulder. And we will talk to you very soon as this whole thing unfolds, my friend.
Great. Take care, Rick.
Thank you, Ed. All right. There you go. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy in Boulder, Colorado. That was, you know who that guy was? That Terry guy? That was another Dan. Dear radio station, I find it disgusting that you are...
I'm spending more time talking about...
All right, we'll do this. We're going to come back. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop at 2:30. We're talking to somebody who was at the Rockstar Supernova taping on Sunday.
I wish Joe was seeing this thing.
Now, we're going to find out what she did say. We're going to find out what she performs tonight, actually, later on this hour. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Here's the O'Neater.
Could be happy here.